It's time for Gerby's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gerby. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gerby and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gerby and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon to everyone in Los Angeles. Yes, that is true. I am Alan Gerby, and I am still the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gerby and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am right here at Talk Radio 790 KBC to be the managing partner of your life. And of course, as usual, we have with me my co-host, Carrie Kasem, who looks just gorgeous today. What did you do to your hair?
I cut it. I'm surprised you even noticed. Most people didn't, which is crazy that you did. And, you know, every time you open the show, it puts a huge smile on my face. I literally, like, it's so infectious. Even Dino's now calling you good.
Good afternoon. Well, you know, we're here turning negatives into positives. We're turning Murphy's Law upside down. We're doing good for the community. And today's show is going to be no different from any other show because we are doing a lot of good right here at Gerby's Law. It was a big week. There was a lot of stories that went on this week. Of course, yesterday we heard about Amanda Knox. Amanda Knox, finally, the decision came out of Italy that overturned the murder conviction of Amanda Knox, and we are going to talk about that on our show today. We're fortunate to have with us, of course, one of the friends of the show, counsel and spokesperson for Friends of Amanda Knox. It is the one and only Ann Bremner from Seattle, and she'll be calling us in about 10 minutes, and she's going to talk with another super trial attorney, one of the best in the country, Philip Bosch. Philip Bosch is well known to many, many in California and throughout the country. He's the founding member and partner of the Bosch Law Group, and Phil is going to be in studio, and he's got a lot to talk about. There are a lot of cases that you do not want to miss. He's been involved with so many high-profile cases, and I think he has a few opinions, and of course, he has those opinions because he went to college at Brown University. Go Bruins. Now they're the Bears. And he's a fellow Brunonian, ever true. So we're happy to have Phil on the show. You know, I got to tell you, Carrie,
I was
really upset reading about the German Wings flight that went down and then finding out this guy, the co-pilot, Andreas Lubitz, took it down.
Psychiatric problems. Now, this girlfriend that came forward finally came out and said, look, the guy had major problems, mental issues. Why wouldn't you come forward knowing this man's a pilot?
Well, you know, this begs a lot of questions because, as everyone knows, I'm an expert in a California specialization in workers' compensation. We deal with this all the time. What is the liability of an employer when they have someone who has these problems? And, of course, when they put everyone's trust in this person, when you're flying an airplane or when you're driving a school bus, and people wonder, they say, why should the employer be liable? Why should an employer who may know nothing about this be liable? Well, there's a slippery slope here, because if we start turning our head to the employers, to Lufthansa, who is the, you know, German Wings is a subsidiary of Lufthansa, how are we ever going to protect people? We need to hold employers responsible for the people who work for them, or we're all in trouble.
I guess this guy hid it. I don't know how you hide psychiatric problems, especially if he's on medication. Then there's going to be a trail there. And wouldn't a doctor that's seeing him have to report this, or did he just lie to everybody? I guess more is going to come out. We're going to figure it out. But how do you hide that you're this mentally ill?
Well, I'll tell you, doctors have a responsibility. And, you know, here in L.A., we have something called the 72-hour hold.
Yeah.
And if they're a danger, either to themselves or to others, the doctors have a responsibility. So there's a lot of issues here with respect to liability. I think that we're going to talk a little bit about this with Phil Bosch when he comes on, because he defended in the Michael Jackson case, the wrongful death case, defended one of the defendants and was able to prove that there was no liability for that person. But it is a fine line, and we're going to talk more about that. The question becomes, who is responsible when someone takes down a plane with 150-odd people on the plane?
Yeah, you're right. It's the employer. It is the employer. Lufthansa is going to have to pony up a lot of money.
Yeah, and the legal experts have said it. A lot of people have been interviewed on this, and the legal experts have said that regardless of how it looks right now with respect to any negligence or negligent hiring, which is another concept that we can talk about, it looks like it's what we just say, there is a priori evidence that something was wrong and he should not have been in the cockpit. But it's a horrible, horrible tragedy, and hopefully something good can come of it and that we can avoid such tragedies in the future, because, you know, our hearts go out to the families and the friends of those who lost their life because of this really horribly mentally ill co-pilot.
And I've said this before, there's mental illness, and then I say some people are evil, and they say not all people with mental illness are evil. Absolutely not. Absolutely
right.
Not at all. But where is that? Where does evil come in and mental illness start? Because I feel like with my stepmother, she's pure evil.
Right. You know? Well, you know, the question becomes whether we can hold these people responsible. And that's a legal question that we often see in the courts on criminal allegations,
right,
whether someone should be held legally responsible, where they understand right and wrong.
Right.
And maybe that's a concept that we don't really understand, because a lot of times on the defense, when someone is defending a criminal and they are pleading insanity, I mean, is it right that that person should be put into a mental hospital and not into prison? Maybe so. Maybe they don't understand right or wrong.
I guess there's few of those, right, where people just don't get it. They just they're so far gone, or they just don't understand, or they don't have the capacity. But then you have evil people that then say, oh, you know, it was insanity, I was mentally ill. And I say, that's such a fine line.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. If you have an opinion on that, call us right here at 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-KABC. I want to talk a little bit about my favorite subject. That's Adrian Peterson. So we've talked about this for the last year, and I'm talking about it again.
Okay.
So Adrian Peterson looks like he may hold out and not play for the Minnesota Vikings, although he is under contract. And his agent, I call him Dogma, but I think it's Dogra, Ben Dogma, he's very dogmatic. He's going out into the media and saying that Adrian Peterson should not play for the Vikings. They should trade him.
Mm.
The guy has a contract. Adrian Peterson was my best friend.
What are you talking about?
No, he was my best friend. I liked the guy before. My son, my two-year-old son, has an Adrian Peterson jersey. So, I liked him before all this happened. But here's the point, the legal point here. When an athlete signs a contract and says they're going to play and they get the money, there are risks on both sides.
Sure.
The team or the company, the employer who employs the player or the employee, takes a risk. They're putting up this money that the guy might suck. And they give him a 4-year contract, a 5-year contract. There's risks on both sides. Why should the athlete then be able to demand a trade or ask to be let loose, a free agent, to sign with someone else? In the Adrian Peterson case, all the Vikings did was pay him over $12 million last year while he sat on the commissioner's exempt list. Then they welcomed him back this year and said, okay, you made a mistake. You've learned from your mistake. We're welcoming you to the team. They're trying to build a team around him. And what does he say? I don't want to come and
play
for you.
Sorry, I don't want to be here anymore.
I mean, you know what the Vikings have to do to get him to play for them? Nothing. They have a contract. It's a contract.
How does this guy think he can get away with this?
Well, I don't think he will, because if the Vikings dig in their heels, and sometimes employers have to do this, they dig in their heels, they say, if you're not going to play, you're in breach of contract, and we're not going to pay you a penny. So if you want to sit out at 30 years old and not make a penny and then gamble about trying to get picked up next year or the year after, then that's your deal. But please, we're asking you. We're rolling out the red carpet. Come play. Show that you're a man, not a child. Okay, that's enough on Adrian Peterson.
We have to have our Adrian Peterson update.
Yeah, we have to have that. And quickly, the NCAA tournament. Unfortunately, my bracket is busted. Mm. But my wife, Nancy, is doing fantastic. She's never watched an NCAA game in her life. And she has the final four picked, and it's got big game. Wisconsin-Arizona coming up after our show, so listen to our show. Then you can tune in to see if there's a repeat from last year and Wisconsin wins. I think she picked Wisconsin. She's right up there. I'm right at the bottom. How's your bracket doing, Carrie?
Oh, it's fantastic. I have none of them done.
You never did it.
I don't even know how to do them.
Okay, we're going to turn to some serious stuff. Thanks for that. We have Ann Bremner, who we will have on the line with us to talk about Amanda Knox after the break. And, of course, we're bringing on Phil Bosch of the Bosch Law Group. He will be here, fellow Brunonian, right after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
How great is it that in 2015 we can actually say that Mike Bonin is joined by an entire LA council that is down with gay rights? By the way, I'm not saying that based on any kind of voting record. It's just assume, considering how much time they spend bending over for the unions.
The Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips.
Weekdays 3 to 6
on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They are the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Sinatra Sings Sinatra, As I Remember It, starring Frank Sinatra Jr.
Saturday, May 2nd, 7:30, Sagerstrom Center for the Arts in Costa Mesa.
Frank Sinatra Jr. shares in the multimedia 100th birthday celebration of the music, life, and legend of Sinatra.
Tickets are on sale now. Buy tickets at the box office by calling 714-556-2787 or online at scmta.org.
Sinatra Sings Sinatra, As I Remember It.
This weekend on Champions of Justice, the subject is human trafficking. Hundreds of thousands of adults and children alike enslaved for manual labor and sex trade here in our own cities. Tom Girardi talks with two crusaders against human trafficking about the need for awareness and access to our schools for education to prevent extortion of our children. Tune in Champions of Justice Sunday afternoon at 2 here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Oh, yes. Call us now. We are back right here at Gervie's Law, Talk Radio 790 KABC. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm here with my co-host, Carrie Kasem, and we are so honored to have with us in studio Philip Bosch. Phil Bosch is with the Bosch Law Group, one of the most highly selective, and I got to say, Phil, your clients are some of the top people, some of the top cases we see in law in California and in the country.
Thanks for that, but we do represent a lot of regular people.
Okay.
That's really...
Yeah, it's so funny because I said the same thing to Gloria Allred, and what did she say? The same answer. You came up with the same answer. I got to tell you, lawyers are really down to earth, and you're going to find Phil is really down to earth. I mean, some of the causes that he's behind is really incredible, and I'll tell you, all our lawyers who we have on the show, they always bring it down to the grassroots, and I think you learn that at Brown University when you go to Brown, like Phil and I did. Before we get to some of those cases that I talked about that your firm handles, we are really privileged to have on the phone with us Ann Bremner. And Ann Bremner was on our show a few weeks ago, and she is not only one of the top trial lawyers in the country, but she is also counsel and spokesperson for Friends of Amanda Knox. Ann, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Oh, I'm the one that's privileged. Thanks for having me.
Oh, hi, Ann. It's good to have you back here.
And
thanks for having me.
You know, Ann, we are going to triple team you because we have Phil Bosch here, and he is going to ask some questions as well. Because, first of all, we have to offer congratulations. You have
put in
so much time and so much effort in helping out the Amanda Knox cause. And finally, yesterday, finally, the Italian Supreme Court overturned the murder conviction. So congratulations on that. How does it feel?
Oh, it's just overwhelming, and thank you so much. And so many people work so hard on behalf of Amanda Knox, but the headline in the Seattle Times today is hers, and she says, "I am so grateful." And I can just say I'm just so grateful for so many that helped her and believed in her over these 8 years. It's just, it's amazing. I mean, it was justice delayed, but it surely wasn't justice denied at the end of the day.
So there really is a little bit of vindication, or a lot of it. How do you look at this when you think about all the work you put in? Weren't you a little concerned that maybe, just maybe, the Supreme Court would have gone the other direction?
Oh, I certainly was, because what was really predictable in this case was that it was unpredictable, that when she was acquitted, clearly with independent experts testifying and throwing out the quote-unquote forensic evidence, in her appeal de novo, when she was fully exonerated, sorry, I'm so tired, and then when that got reversed, it was so stunning that I guess we had to brace ourselves, you know, yet again for a downturn and an unexpected turn in this case. So given that this same court that ruled yesterday was the court that had overturned her acquittal, we had a lot of concerns, for sure.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that.
Now,
Go ahead.
I think, Ann, when you were on the show last, I asked you the same question, but I want to know, if Italy decided to say, hey, she's not innocent, they convicted her, she, you know, they want to put her in jail, it went from, 16 years to 18 years, 18 and a half years, what, the extradition, would that happen?
Well, it could, and that was a real scary thing. And by the way, thanks for helping Tom Wright and my group.
I was going to say, thank you so much for sending them my way.
Yeah, he loves you, and thank you for all your help, and he's one of our main fabulous members of Friends of Amanda Knox. So thank you so much. And the extradition could have happened because double jeopardy, many people felt, wouldn't apply or wouldn't be a defense. I believe it would be. But given that she was convicted twice and another defense would have been factual innocence, that could be difficult too. So we didn't, in a hearing would take some time, and it's really expensive. And, you know, she could well have been forced back to Italy. I mean, those were huge fears for her. I just got a nice note from her about 5 minutes ago. It just, you know, it kind of breaks your heart that she's just this young girl
right.
that was so fearful for so long and now so relieved.
Have you had a chance to talk to her or the family?
Yeah, I mean, all of them in the last few days. The one thing they keep saying is, we're over the moon.
Yeah.
There were fireworks going off in West Seattle around their house. People were driving by and clapping out the windows. I mean, she was, you know, everybody was there. And she came out and spoke, which she's only done once out here in the U.S. in Seattle. And that's when her plane landed. In Seattle, to huge crowds.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now,
so supported.
You know, Phil, I have a question for you. When do you believe, because I know you've had this situation with some of your cases, when do you think that our courts should actually honor judgments of other countries? And doesn't that cause a real conundrum for people here where there's judgments against them in another country?
Well, sure, and Anne, you all did a terrific job. It's even more terrific that it happened by the Italian court rather than having you have to fight through the U.S. courts whether you would honor the judgment of the of the Italian court. But what happens sometimes in these situations, we had one recently with a Chinese judgment, and then we had another one where the law of Sharia is applied against a United States citizen. And the question of whether a court here is going to honor a judgment of a foreign court is a tough question to answer, and it depends in part on how you view the rights given to the citizen in the proceeding that took place. If, for example, you don't have to have the same system that we have of justice in order to have the foreign judgment apply, and there seem to be a lot of commentators suggesting that even though the Italian system, which seemed frankly bizarre, and Ann, you did a great job navigating it, but basically it seemed like rights that we would expect and find commonplace here really didn't seem to be accorded to her there. And is that necessary in order to enforce a judgment here from a country like that? And the answer really is no. I mean, she could have been sent back, so it was a terrific result that it happened inside Italy, I think.
But why should we, and this is to both Ann and Phil, why should we be respecting another rule of law if we, in this country, don't follow it? And if we talk about Sharia law, I know there was a case back in, I believe, 2010 in New Jersey, which involved a man, a husband and a wife, and a sexual relations between the two. And the wife didn't want the man to have sex with her, but he said that he had no intent to hurt her or anything, because under Sharia law, he was having sex with his wife, and it's fine. And the New Jersey law actually respected that. The courts respected the Sharia law, saying, you know, not giving the woman her rights, saying that, well, hey, if that's what he had, no mens rea, there's no criminal intent here. How do we deal with that situation, especially when we look at the gathering of evidence like it was in Italy, and say, hey, we don't do things like that?
Well, you know what? The Sharia law example is something very unusual and different. I mean, Sharia is different from our set of laws in the sense that they're not codified anywhere. You can't go to books. You can't even go online and pull up statutes and cases and precedents. The law of Sharia really becomes a series of interpretations by very respected elders in the religion who offer opinions as to how things ought to be, but to research the law and to try to find what precedents and statutes apply, as we do here, requires them to be all written down in an organized and codified way, and that's not what happens in the law of Sharia. So,
and to just say something, I have a lot of Muslim friends, and when I lived in Singapore, there were a lot of Indonesian Muslims that didn't follow Sharia law. Sharia law seems to be kind of made up on the spot. Now, I don't know enough about this, and excuse me if I'm wrong, but it's like, well, you know what? That wouldn't be right. We're going to call that Sharia law. And if a woman gets raped, we need four men to testify, yes, she was raped. You know, it seems like just stuff that randomly, it's arbitrary.
Well, you know, I don't know that I would go so far as to say arbitrary, because a lot of it seems to be based on viewpoints as to moral principles. And part of the reason why some courts might accept that is because when you have a rule of law from a foreign country based on moral principles, it doesn't have to be precisely our moral principles. We want our citizens to be treated well in foreign countries, so we respect foreign judgments as we hope that American judgments, U.S. judgments, will be respected overseas. But, when you come down to looking at the law of Sharia in particular, it's unusual.
Right.
Because you can't find it in precedent.
And we have to differentiate. And, Anne, I want to bring you in here. When we talk about the discovery process and evidence gathering, we're talking about different legal systems and legal standards. But, of course, don't we have to respect what Italy did in the Amanda Knox case, even if we think that it may not have been what an American court would respect?
Well, exactly. And what Phil said was excellent as well. You know, we have treaties with 100 countries, the United States. There's countries we don't have treaties with, but we have to rely on something called the Comity of Nations, and it's COMITY, which is basically good relations and goodwill. So we have to respect the sovereignty of Italy.
We have to take a quick break. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
I'd love to, thanks.
All right, I appreciate it. We got the bottom of the hour coming up, so we'll be back with both Ann Bremner and Phil Bosch right here on Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Recovery crews are risking their lives retrieving human remains from Tuesday's Germanwings Airbus crash. Then, correspondent Nick Robertson says there's more detail work to do.
From the mountainside, they go to a medical center where forensic tests are done, DNA testing, biometric testing, fingerprints, that sort of thing.
With only days to go before the deadline for an Iran nuclear agreement, correspondent Elise Labatt reports negotiations have hit a snag.
I understand from diplomats here that Iran is really playing hardball about two specific key items, namely the sanctions. Iran wants to get them lifted day one as soon as this agreement goes into effect. And the other holdup is about the research and development program that Iran wants to maintain.
A spring break shooting spree in Panama City Beach, Florida, and an Alabama man is in custody, charged with attempted murder. Seven people were shot. Several are students at Alabama A&M University. No fatalities, but victims were inside the home and across the street. I'm Evan Haining.
Private mortgage insurance, or PMI, can cost you thousands. But with the PMI Advantage from Quicken Loans, you may never have to pay those expensive monthly mortgage insurance premiums again. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans, and I'm excited to tell you that the Quicken Loans PMI Advantage is our lender-paid mortgage insurance program. You see, we pay the PMI so you don't have to. Make the smart call and talk to one of our home loan experts today at 800-QUICKEN. You'll learn how the Quicken Loans PMI Advantage can give you more options, more flexibility, and may save you thousands when you refinance. And for 5 years in a row now, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction. And this year, for the first time, they've also ranked us highest in mortgage servicing. To learn more, call us at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit us at quickenloans.com.
Visit jdpower.com for award information. Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. License law 50 states. NMLS number 33.
The first step to a beautiful lawn this spring is an application of Revive. Hi, Dale Langford here. You know, I've been writing lawn and garden columns for over 40 years, and I found one product that really works. It's Revive Organic Soil Treatment. Revive is a proven, unique formula of wetting agents, soil conditioners, and nutrients. It's organic-based, safe for kids and pets, and will not burn your lawn. Revive moves fertilizer and water down deep to the roots. Hey, that saves water and fertilizer, and that saves money. The results are spectacular. Get greener grass with less water. A lush, dark green, healthy lawn that you can be proud of. And remember, saving water is saving money. Revive is available at your favorite garden center. Visit Revive.com for more information and store locations. Use Revive every few weeks for the greenest lawn on your block. In fact, use Revive right now. It works.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you are listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And I am here with my co-host, Carrie Kasem. And we are having a very stimulating discussion right now on the Amanda Knox case. I have Phil Bosch here from the Bosch Law Group. He's right here in studio, and he is talking with Ann Bremner as well, who's in Seattle. And Ann Bremner is counsel and spokesperson for Friends of Amanda Knox. Before the news, Ann, you were saying, talking about the discovery process and about how things differ in Italy from here, yet apparently the Supreme Court got it right.
They got it right, and that's exactly what I had said publicly yesterday. They got it right. They did the right thing, and with not a lot of fanfare. I mean, and they gave her the highest level finding of exoneration. So they did everything right yesterday. And, you know, the Italian system has benefits that we don't have. You know, we, of course, believe we have the best system in the world, and I think that we do. But, you know, the Italian review and lack of double jeopardy was, I think, the biggest issue in the Amanda Knox case. And our group tasked ourselves early on to try and turn around the supertanker of false and fallacious information about her that was in the press. because
right.
there had been so much that was out there, and it's Phil knows this. It was a closed hearing for a year. When you have a closed hearing and a gag order, a lot of things can come out wrong and go around the world and go viral in a big case, a high-profile case, and that's what happened to Amanda Knox.
And
turn around eventually.
What happened?
And, of course,
and what happened with Rafael Solicito? Because that's the ex-boyfriend, and apparently he had said some things against Amanda through this process. But you know, he's exonerated as well. But he lives in Italy.
Right, and they took his passport. If it had gone against him, of course he would be. He would be incarcerated. At the end of the day, he came out and said, "I want to be separated from her. I'm not Amanda Knox. You know, I can't account for all of her whereabouts." He said things like that in some briefing and arguments in the highest court in Italy, the law, the court of cassation. So those things came out recently where he was not in lockstep with her in a defense anymore.
That's probably because, isn't she still engaged to Colin Sutherland?
Yeah, she's engaged, but you know, Raphael's been out here to Seattle a couple of times. I've met him, and they remain friends, and they've always supported each other. He wrote a book called Honor Bound about how he always was loyal to her. He just simply said recently, "I need to be separated because she's the one that's been vilified all over in the press, and she's been the focal point of this case." And he's saying, "I deserve my own consideration."
And one question that Phil had as we sat here, we were talking about this pending slander defamation suit against, I guess it was Patrick Lumumba, the bar owner who brought it. In the Italian courts. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was criminal and civil. And in Italy, they try all those cases together. And so the wrongful death case of Meredith Kircher's family and this case you just mentioned were tried along with the criminal. But that's also concluded because she served 3 years, which would have been that sentence. So she's got credit for time served and she's done.
Is there
that's complete.
Is there a civil judgment of some kind for money that survives there in this Italian final opinion?
I didn't hear that last part. I'm sorry.
In the slander suit that was filed against Amanda, I read somewhere that had been actually upheld as a judgment against her for...
That's true. And that's what I was saying. It's criminal and civil, so that's all upheld, but it's done because on the criminal, she served her time.
And
so
what about civil?
Is there a judgment?
Well, it's done with a judgment.
A judgment against her that is enforceable here, or is...
Well, you know, let me say this. In Italy, we don't know exactly what they said in their ruling and for 90 days. At the end of 90 days, they filed what are basically written findings of fact and conclusions of law. It's called a motivation. So we don't know exactly all of the terms that were decided yesterday until we get that written document.
Okay. So there may be still a possibility that Amanda may have to open up her wallet a little bit to pay off this pending civil.
The first time she opened up her wallet, I mean, she's had to pay for lawyers for 8 years.
And that's a good question, because Phil brought this up, too. How do these people pay for lawyers? How does someone like Amanda Knox pay for a lawyer?
Well, didn't she make $4 million? She did sell a book, correct? Am I right about that? Okay.
Yeah, but she's had millions in attorney's fees.
Yeah.
Her mom is a teacher. You know, her dad worked at Macy's. They lived there in a very modest home, the families in West Seattle. And, you know, they just were people's means. So there's been people contributing air miles. We've had fundraisers, you know, and, of course, she did have the book deal. But, you know, there have been enormous expenses, including travel expenses of all of her family, because they always were there. There was always a family member there month by month by month, you know, the whole time she was in prison for 4 years.
Phil, has that been your experience as well with some of your clients that may not have the wherewithal to pay for their legal counsel?
Amanda is in an obviously unusual and fortunate situation in the sense that she, as a personality, is telegenic. There's a lot of belief that she's innocent and has been railroaded. She's a very sympathetic figure who's been 4 years in prison. I think that the life story rights and the ability to write a book and command lots of money is unique to her in some ways. And people who aren't in that situation do wind up having to go out and seek what sometimes is referred to as alternative billing arrangements with lawyers. You know, our hourly rates are ridiculous sometimes, and you get to alternative ideas, contingent fees, hybrids, pieces of recovery, or whatever it is. Barter. Sometimes in the old days, you get chickens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Wouldn't that be great, Bill? Alan?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because that's a great way to end our little talk here, because I know, you know, Ann, you're someone who isn't really that interested in the money. I just know from a lot of your social media posts and everything that you really care about people. So sometimes lawyers actually do things that is not just for the money and not for chickens or barter or anything else. It's because they're doing the right thing. And Ann Bremner, you have done the right thing with Amanda Knox. And we really appreciate you coming on. I know you're exhausted. You've been on every media outlet out there in the last day or two. We appreciate it. Ann Bremner is... you can find her, and it's AnnBremner.com, isn't it, your web address?
It is, and I have to tell you, I'm so honored to be on with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, go get some rest now, Ann. Thanks for being on Gervie's Law. So, Phil, you know, we're going to change gears a little bit because while you have a lot of experience with cases like Amanda Knox, there are other cases that may not be as popular. For instance, let's talk about Anna Nicole Smith. Anna Nicole Smith, to the general public, is not really an Amanda Knox. And I say that because of, and I know you're shaking your head. You can debate me because, you know, I was on the Brown debate team. Actually, my debate partner was Faisal Hussein. Interestingly enough, it was King Hussein's son.
Oh, wow.
The prince,
from Jordan.
From Jordan.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was way back when. But I see Anna Nicole Smith not as sympathetic as Amanda Knox.
You know, when people say things like that, I have to say that she never certainly had the resources to compete in the public relations arena with the people that she was litigating with, for sure. But there was always a story that I felt was compelling, that when Howard, her husband, an elderly gentleman hitting, you know, 90s, was dying in his last year, there was a DNR, do not resuscitate order, basically, placed on him. And Anna blew into his house one day, and she had the habit of coming in and coming out, and he was very happy always to see her. And he began to choke, and he was choking on his phlegm and dying right there, and he had full-time care. And Anna comes barging into the room. This is the testimony I thought was very compelling from the person there. The person, you know, the nurse there, is knocked out of the way by Anna, who comes in as he's dying and choking, and she wants to know, where is the suction equipment? Where is it?
Yeah.
Well, the DNR order, it wasn't there anymore.
Oh.
So she proceeds for the next 20 minutes to suction him with her mouth. And he survived.
Wow.
And lived for another 6 months. And was able to tell everybody who would listen that she was not only the person who saved his life, but the light of his life and the person who he wanted to take care of and loved. And at the end of the day, that really was what the story was about. You're allowed to love who you want to love, however old you are. And
so he didn't have dementia. He was cognizant of everything. So with the do not resuscitate. Now, my dad, when he had the phlegm, he had a do not resuscitate, but they would take the phlegm out of his. They were not going to let him choke to death on his own fluids. That's if he had a heart attack or if he, you know, something happened. What, they were going to let this man right there just choke on his own phlegm?
The nurse attendant who offered the testimony and tells the story under oath, which I just recounted, didn't get to the point of what she would have done if Anna didn't knock her out of the way and take over. I mean, she wasn't doing it at the moment. And the unavailability of the equipment was, Anna was used to the equipment.
Right.
It wasn't there at the critical moment. Now, you know, you never know what dramatic event would happen if she weren't there. So
right.
I can't say that the nurse was ready to let him die at that very moment. The purpose of the story was that, you know, you don't do that unless you have a real serious connection with the person on the on the bed. You call 911 or you listen to the nurse or you do something.
So, Phil.
Yes.
It sounds to me like you've just given us your closing argument in the case. And the jury comes back and says, you get $480 million for your client, and they name that one of the largest recoveries at the time for a client.
You know, but that one story wasn't the unusual part of the relationship that they did have. The thing about Howard Marshall, which was so interesting, I mean, the stories about the guy abound. He was the swing block vote and owner of Koch Industries. The Koch brothers have, and his stock remained the piece that between the two Koch brothers, so to speak. And Howard was such an interesting guy that, you know, one day for Christmas he decided to, hadn't bought her anything on Christmas Eve, so a whole truck from Neiman Marcus, a moving van full of material, backed up to his door.
Carrie,
and the,
your jaw can close right now.
It was, and the thing about it, you know, the Neiman Marcus guy who tells, who testified about it, it was the biggest payday for him in his entire career, and he was so happy to come out there on Christmas Eve. But she goes through gown after gown and parades in front of him while he's sitting in the living room. He's the happiest guy in the world that he's buying all these things for. And the guy in the truck, you know, has the crown jewels at the end. It's a $250,000 necklace, and, you know, he wants to put it on her for the – and she says – and he recounts this. She says, how much is that? And he goes, $250,000. And he goes – she says to him, no, that's too expensive. You hold on to that. We're not going to – we're not going to wear that. I mean, you know, he's bought everything else in the whole truck for a private fashion show. So when he comes, when he's done, he asks the guy from Neiman Marcus, he says, Howard, sitting in his chair having fun, he says, okay, is there anything else? And, you know, the guy said, well, there is something, but she told me not to show it to you. And he goes, what is it? And he brings it out. And Howard goes, oh, it's a bauble, and he immediately insists that that get thrown in with the rest.
That she take it. Wow. And so give us a quick update, because we got a lot of topics to cover. We only have 15 more minutes. So what's the update on the situation with Anna Nicole Smith? Because litigation
continued. It seems like forever litigation.
Yeah.
Some of these things don't have to go on this long, but when large quantities of money are involved, people tend not to get as worried about lawyer fees as they should in most cases. So this has gone on for a long time. And presently it sits in the Texas Court of Appeals, basically. And the reason for that is that one of the parties to the Texas lawsuit that went on, parallel to our federal court litigation here, filed a bankruptcy that froze what was happening in Texas for many, many years. And now we're waiting for an opinion from the Texas Court of Appeals. That's the next thing.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll be back after this. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Dude, have you seen a video of the chimps, like, luring other chimps in? Because, you know, they eat each other.
Yeah.
They murder.
Oh,
chimps murder.
Exactly.
The chimps, like, set traps, and they corner in, like, a couple of other chimps, and then, like, two chimps get attacked by 50.
Oof.
And they just eat them. And, like, they don't go for the neck, like, let's just get this over with.
They tear apart.
They start eating its butt while it's, like, still alive, and the thing's just like,
Dr. Drew, Midday Live. Psycho Mike Catherwood. Weekdays, noon to 3 on KABC.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Murphy's Law. But have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Kerry Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Yes, we are back. I am Alan Gervie with the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, and we're talking with Phil Bosch here, who is with the Bosch Law Group. And before that, he was with the well-known law firm Kinsella, Bosch, Fujikawa, and Towel. And before that, Gibson, Dun & Crutcher. So he has a long history of working at some of the best firms, and now he is the founding partner and the leader of the Bosch Law Group. We were just talking about Anna Nicole Smith, a case that he's intimately involved with because he represented Anna Nicole Smith and her allies. You also were involved in the Michael Jackson wrongful death case and Gary Coleman. There was a lot of litigation with Gary Coleman through the years, but let's talk quickly about Michael Jackson. You represented Kenny Ortega, and he was a producer for the This Is It concert?
Well, Kenny is not only a producer, but a director. He was Michael's close friend. He directed This Is It, which was the show Michael was coming back
right.
with, and all of Michael's tours and major events were directed by Kenny, but he also is a major talent. He's put on Olympic Games. He's put on Academy Awards. The man has a tremendous talent and resume way beyond Michael, even though they were very tight.
So why was he sued, and by whom?
Well, the family of Michael Jackson is a group of individuals. They had their own points of view, and the lawyers named Kenny as one of the defendants early on. Why, I don't know, but probably the theories of who was responsible for Michael Jackson's death started to evolve a bit to who was responsible for hiring Conrad Murray, the doctor, and who supervised him, who did they drive Michael too hard? That was kind of the
right
theme that was found by the jury not to impose liability.
So we talked earlier in the show about the Lufthansa, of course, the tragedy that occurred with the German Wings co-pilot. Why in the case that you're talking about with Kenny Ortega and AEG, who was the production company, why would they not be potentially responsible for negligent hiring of Dr. Murray or not keeping tabs on what was going on, as we think that Lufthansa will be liable or responsible for the deaths of the 150 people?
Well, there's a completely fundamental difference in both fairness and the way the law looks at the situation when you're a defenseless passenger sitting in an airplane or a defenseless passenger in an automobile versus someone who, as an adult, even though troubled, participated in the events that took his own life. Michael, a lot of the evidence indicates, was troubled in many ways and knowingly following the regimen of Dr. Murray. And so that's a fundamental difference that can't be overlooked. And you never know why a jury decides what it does when it renders a ruling, because you're not part of the jury deliberation. But most of the reports that come out after suggest that this was a situation where people were essentially Michael being held responsible for the conduct that caused his death.
I'm glad you said that, because I felt like there was a lot of responsibility that was placed on everybody else besides Michael. He knew what he was doing. He'd been doing this for a while. But can you tell the story you told us before we got on air, just about what the jury did after?
I am, Kenny Ortega is probably one of my favorite clients of all time, and he was I think wrongly sued, and he's been a terrific host on Dancing with the Stars and other things, or So You Think You Can Dance. And
right.
He's one of the great choreographers as well as directors of all time. And after he went through his credentials, one of the lawyers put him through his paces before he was giving his opinions. And during that time, when he was describing his credentials, I mean, you know, here's a man who had produced and directed all of the greats of all time, you know, starting with Elvis and winding up through Michael and the Olympics. And, you know, I mean, and a very modest man. And when he was through speaking, this, I mentioned earlier that what you're alluding to, I'd never seen in my entire career, really, a jury give somebody coming off the witness stand an ovation. Which is what they
I've never
did.
Heard of that
That's
before.
Funny. Yeah. I mean, and he deserved every bit of it, and nobody said anything.
It was like a performance.
I know.
You know, as his lawyer, I'm sitting there and getting goosebumps.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, I've made a lot of closing arguments in my day, and never has a judge or a jury stood up and, clapped for me.
Yeah, I mean,
bravo.
It was a moment, and nobody said anything. The judge didn't say disregard that. Nobody said anything. They just moved on to the next.
Speaking of moving on to the next, we're running out of time. I gotta tell you, Phil got so many things going on. He has a son, Brennan Bosch. I'm going to tell you a quick story. In 2010, I'm a big fantasy baseball player, and I was playing, and a friend of mine, Fred Berkley, who's Elizabeth Berkley from Saved by the Bell's father, came up to me and said, why don't you pick this kid who's on the Detroit Tigers? He came from Harvard Westlake, and of course, since that time, we've seen Max Fried, Lucas Giolito, Austin Wilson, Jack Flaherty, a lot of Harvard Westlake guys go in the top drafts in the Major League Baseball. Brennan Bosch comes onto the Tigers, and he has an incredible, incredible three, four months, which puts me over the top, and I end up winning the Yahoo because no one knew who Brennan Bosch was.
Really? You picked him?
Yeah, and I picked him because of Fred Berkley.
That's great.
Now playing for the Cincinnati Reds. He's in training camp now, I imagine.
Did your son play baseball throughout? Was he like, as a kid, young kid, was that his sport?
He played three sports. He played soccer, he played football, and then eventually he had to concentrate on baseball because he was very good at it. But he always loved baseball.
Right.
And this is now his fourth year in the major leagues, and he got a double with the bases loaded today.
So all right.
Awesome.
It's a good day.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
So you can all cheer on Brennan Bosch. He's working with the Cincinnati Reds now. Now, we're going to turn quickly to Heal the Bay and Tree People. You were the president of Heal the Bay. Is that correct?
I was fortunate to be that for a period of time, and presently I am on the board and very active with Tree People. And mm-hmm. I'm thanking you for letting me give a plug, because my thing really here is we at Tree People, it's a terrific organization. But first off, it comes to the point where everybody, I think, ought to be a tree person.
Yes.
People ought to be connected with the environment. There's nothing greater than the symbol that we have. Tree People not only plants trees, but they're managing essentially the drought in Southern California.
Right.
But also the education they give the kids. When
kids
I was in school, I'd go there and they showed us like the different leaves, the different birds, they really teach you about nature there.
It's a wonderful place. It's a facility up at the top of Mulholland. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the facility. It's really a state of mind. So we're going to collect about 1 million tree people. In the net. Andy Lipkus, who founded it, had a great movement, that plant 1 million trees in L.A., and Tree People did that. And it took a little bit of time, but not that much. And
so where can people go if they want to get more information on Tree People?
Well, there's going to be outreach everywhere. The kids are being, first up. We have kids streaming through there. But basically, there's a outreach in terms of collecting tree people. Tree persons. Everybody's
so is
a
there
tree
a treepeople.com?
Treepeople.com is a great website, and we have volunteers and donors and people. But it's really exciting to see the growth and all the people
It's amazing, and it's so important. Read about trees. You'll see how important it is. It's the Bosch Law Group. Go to Bosch Law Group to read more about Phil and find out what he's been up to. We have Ken Koken waiting around, but unfortunately we've run out of time.
Ken.
He's going to be on the cutting floor today.
Yeah.
It's too bad. He had a real good question about the health. Earth Hour.
8:30.
Earth Hour Day 8:30
tonight. We'll celebrate Earth Hour. Shut off your lights for Earth Hour. It's really important. We've done a lot of good work here. Phil, I want to thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law.
Really.
Such an interesting guy. You got so many things going on. Tree People, Heal the Bay. all Bosch Law Group. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.